Right now.
Well, Wolf, it's been confirmed within the last few minutes that another US soldier has been killed as his convoy was blasted by a roadside bomb as it drove through the streets of the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. We understand that the soldier is from the 1st Armored Division, the organization, the unit in control of the Iraqi capital. These two other people are said to have been injured. The incident brings to 42 the number of US soldiers who have been killed in Iraq over the course of this month alone. It's those kinds of casualty figures that have provoked the US military into conducting a much tougher response to those insurgents. They've launched Operation Iron Hammer. This is the third night of that operation. We understand there have been more strikes this evening against suspected militant targets, a warehouse suspected to have been a storage depot for arms used by the militants in the Abu Ghraib area of the city. We also understand there have been mortar strikes from the US towards suspected rocket launching sites of those insurgents, those rockets that launch now almost on a daily basis. Also, there has been helicopter patrols in the skies day and night. Earlier, we joined the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment in one of their nighttime missions. From the skies, US forces are bringing the fight to their attackers. Operation Iron Hammer is a mission to search and destroy suspected militants and to gather intelligence on their movements. Over the rooftops of Baghdad, our Black Hawk helicopter, equipped with night vision, follows a reconnaissance patrol. Amid the noise of the engines and the wind, we circled the city and watched.
The purpose of Operation Iron Hammer is to crack down on the insurgents who have been carrying out increasing attacks against the US and coalition forces. What we're looking for here is any kind of suspicious activity, people preparing to fire mortars or rockets or plant the roadside bombs that have caused such terrible damage to the US and the coalition forces in Baghdad. So far tonight, we've seen nothing, but the insurgents are out there.
On the streets, US troops check for weapons and explosives. In the latest US raids, a former Republican Guard building was hit. Military officials say it was used by insurgents to plan attacks and to store weapons. Commanders say this latest operation is meant to show America's attackers its forces will strike back.
Isn't there a danger that, you know, the Iraqi public could react negatively and, in fact, the level of resentment towards the US forces could actually increase as a result?
Well, I'm sure that there is that possibility, sir, but we're very precise in the type of combat power that we apply, the clearance of fires, the mechanics that we put in place for positive identification prior to engaging are all there to mitigate risk, and we're here to protect the Iraqis, and I think they will see that.
By night, Baghdad appears lit by a million lights, a sign of progress in a city where electricity has been sporadic. But unless Operation Iron Hammer succeeds, security may remain in short supply.
Well, coalition and US commanders say Operation Iron Hammer is an ongoing process. There's no strict timetable for it to come to an end, and it can't.
Shut the hell up, fools. This Operation Hammer is a mission to kill suspected militants. Suspected militants? Okay, but when they turn out to be 6-year-old little kids, I guess you're just going to kill them anyway because they're just going to turn out to be bomb-tossing renegades, right? Then you fools babble out. The killing of America's G.I. Joes has provoked the U.S. military into a much more tougher response. Tougher response? This is just good old-fashioned American hee-haw, collective guilt, collateral damage, shock and all, part two, massive killings. And then you have the nerve also to garble out. The U.S. has now launched into its third night of Operation Iron Hammer. You mean Operation Iron Cross. Hey, wait a minute. Are they talking about the Gestapo suites in Iraq or Oakland under Mayor Jerry Mussolini Brown? I guess we're going to have to start shooting back, too. And you know what type of style, slave style. Check this out. You're listening to 104.1, 96.3 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUVER.com, the world, Slave Revolt Radio Time. Tonight we're going to kick it off with the Beyond the Shadow segment dealing with Rumsfeld. And is he a spin master or just a good, hard-nosed politician? Then we're going to kick it up with Gerald on the Making It Plain News update. Then we'll finish it off as we blast into a Shameless file. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1 Slave Revolt Radio.
Everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
Beyond the Shadow. You know, recently, it seems like a lot of people are trying to fall on their sword for Boy George. Every time you turn around, it's either the CIA that's supposed to do it, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Colin Powell. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. Everyone except the fool that's supposed to be running the ship. But at the same time, they're trying to talk about Rumsfeld's enduring, quote-unquote, legacy. We're going to explore that right quick on a Beyond the Shadow segment. When we have Lauren Thompson, who is on NPR's Talk of the Nation, who describes Rumsfeld's legacy in action. So let's see what he has to say, and then let's take it beyond the shadow. Check this out.
Joining us now is Lauren Thompson. He's a defense analyst at the Lexington Institute, a nonpartisan think tank in Arlington, Virginia, also with us in Studio 3A. Thanks for coming in today.
Hi, Neil.
We've invited you in to give us some historical perspective on the Secretary of Defense. Obviously, his tenure is not up, and his place in history will be determined by a lot of things. One of them is going to be how the war with Iraq turns out. premature to make any pronouncements on that at the moment. But how would you suspect he's doing right now if he got run over by a bus today or resigned?
Well, let's bear in mind that the preponderance of his career is already behind him. He's done a number of major things. He wasn't just the 21st Defense Secretary. He was also the 13th. And he was the ambassador to NATO. And he was elected to Congress for 4 terms. And he was the chairman of 2 Fortune 500 corporations, and on and on and on. He's larger than life, and that's the way he's going to be remembered.
And he certainly captured the American public's attention in a way no Secretary of Defense ever had in the days after 9/11.
Yes, he seems to have a remarkable facility for communicating through the electronic media. He's not faring quite so well these days in the print media, but he has a bluntness and a clarity about him that most political figures even now lack, and that has allowed him to connect, at least since 9/11, very effectively with the public.
Obviously, the policies with which he is most publicly identified are the war on terrorism, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. He came into the Pentagon, though, as a champion of the idea of military transformation,
yes,
of making a lighter, faster, smaller, more agile army in particular.
Yes, that's correct. Probably the most important foundation statement for that came from President Bush before he was president, when he was a candidate on the election trail back in 1999. He gave a speech at a military academy called the Citadel, in which he said he was going to give his defense secretary a mandate to challenge the status quo and envision a new architecture for American defense. Rumsfeld has embraced that mission with a vengeance.
All right, first off, you have a situation where, you know, Rumsfeld, they're talking about how he captured the American public's attention after, you know, the 9/11 events. And all that basically happened is all of them had scowls on their faces, and they were yelling out, "Vengeance is mine." And had Bin Laden in their gun sights as being the perpetrator as quick as they had Oswald in their gun sights as being the lone nut perpetrator. Now, he talks about also how Rumsfeld comes across good in the electronic media, but not so well in the print media. Now, you should think about that. What does that really mean? See, this has turned into a soundbite entertainment culture, mm-hmm, where you could scowl at the little press if they say anything remotely out of line, even though they know their place for the most part, talking about the corporate press, and never really get out of line as far as challenging you on a lot of the lies that they constantly spew out. But in the print media, where it's not like the corporate media is doing a real decent job, but generally in print media, you do write down a little bit more than what you can say in some soundbite questionnaire type of stuff. Just off of the raggedy print media, he can't hold up to all, you know, hold up. And this is why, in part, they want people to be more and more illiterate, to be more influenced by negative attack ads on TV,
right,
to be more susceptible to the whole soundbite and imagery and stuff, because this is how an Arnold Schwarzenegger gets elected.
That's exactly.
So now, this has actually been detected. If you ever see any of these documentaries, they often talk, now this isn't exactly, but I'm talking about image-wise, because they're talking about TV land when you see in the electronic media. Many people in on these documentaries have talked that and said that Kennedy, when he was running against Nixon in his election, an election campaign, when he won it, you know, before he got shot up, of course, that when you just heard what they had to say, most people thought that Kennedy lost the debate and that Nixon won. But when they saw the debate, visually, they thought that Kennedy won, and they were going by appearances, that Nixon was sweating a lot, where Kennedy looked cool and focused and so on and so forth. Now it turns out that it had more to do with the drugs that Kennedy was taking, according to one of these Discovery Channel shows, that, you know, he didn't perspire like, you know, someone normally would under those hot lights and stuff. And Kennedy was in dire physical condition and would have died years earlier if he had not been wealthy enough and came across a particular type of drug that was able to prolong his life. Mm-hmm. But my whole point is that they started to learn on pretty early in the TV media world that appearances, image, has a lot to do with how people perceive how well you come off in a debate. And since the society was turning more into a TV culture, they have taken this to the till.
Okay. You know, how will he be remembered? Larger than life. Well, you can get any little two-bit charlatan or syncopath sophist to get on, you know, the radio and, oh, he's such a wonderful man. The papers. Here is a paper from San Jose. It's called the San Jose Mercury. Now, I'm not supporting the San Jose Mercury, but here it is. They are talking about early eras, Pentagon paying for strategic misjudgments. Well, the Pentagon don't come up with the strategy, my friend. The Defense Department does. That is, Mr. Rumsfeld. He's an abject failure, along with being an assassin and a murderer. That's what they did. They assassinated members of Saddam's family. Straight up assassination. Ain't nothing else you can call it. Now look, I don't think, you know, let's just look. The United States Army has been running buck wild, killing innocent people. They panicking, they scared to death. And the policy is, we don't care what you do to them as long as we get the oil. But it's failing. Clearly, that's not working. Right here, front page of this San Jose Mercury. Bullet holes shattered the windshield of a truck that apparently failed to yield at a U.S. checkpoint in Al-Fallujah on Tuesday. The men inside, three brothers and two of their sons, transporting chickens from their farm, died in the gunfire. This is how the young man just before Tracy played talking about, we protecting y'all. Well, if that's protection, don't let me see you want to do something. What's happening? So why is he so nervous? Why is he so, it's because objective reality is starting to take hold. They can't run. Well, I take that back. They can run. In fact, they did run. They just moved the leadership headquarters out of Iraq, just to let you know, and waved at the soldiers they left behind without bulletproof vests. No, these people's in trouble. You see, the logic, what's really going on here? They're in big trouble.
Here is Rumsfeld now with Tim Russell on Meet the Press. And they're talking about the level of resistance that's increasing in Iraq. So let's see how Rumsfeld addresses this, and we'll take it from there. Check this out.
If, in fact, it was a surface-to-air missile, what does that tell us about the level of resistance we're now encountering in Iraq?
Well, we've known about surface-to-air missiles just before we went in, so there's nothing new there. They're dangerous, and they exist in that country in large numbers, as they do in that part of the world. So it's always a risk.
Reuters is reporting that townspeople celebrated in the streets, yelling, they'll never be safe until they get out. What's your reaction to that?
Oh, we know that the overwhelming majority of the population of Iraq favors the coalition and wants them to stay and appreciates the work and progress that's taking place. We also know that there is some fraction of the population that prefers Saddam Hussein and was benefited by his regime and had the opportunity to enjoy the things he enjoyed, palaces, cars, killing people, mutilating people, and those people obviously would celebrate in the street.
So far, We have lost 377 Americans in Iraq. 2,130 have been wounded or injured. How would you explain to the American people this morning that it is worth that price for the war in Iraq?
Tim, the battle we're engaged in, the global war on terrorism, is an important one. It is a different one than we've been in previously, although terrorism's not new. But the nature of terrorism is that its purpose is to terrorize. Its purpose is to alter people's behavior. And to the extent free people end up behaving in a way that is different from the way free people behave, they've lost. And therefore, the only thing to do is to what the president has announced he's doing, and that is to take the battle, the war on terrorism, to the terrorists where they are.
This is propagandistic spin and double talk that's hard to even compete with. You know, it was Rumsfeld who was the one who set up the Office of Strategic Influence. It's often referred to as Office of Disinformation. And he did this because he wasn't liking some of the reports that were coming out by other agencies about various aspects. One, of course, the aspects of Saddam not having links to Al-Qaeda, Saddam not having these weapons of mass destruction like they were claiming, Saddam not engaged in trying to buy uranium from Iraq. The plagiarized story came out and showed that they were just lying up a storm. The aluminum tube story blew up in their face. So they go and get Chalabi and all of these little thugs and start to basically just make stuff up out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people also were telling him that, and even Boy George's father had said this years ago, that it's easy to come in. It's not that easy coming out. And it's not that easy planting your boots there. See, it's one thing if you're just going in there doing shock and all type bombings and just killing and not planning to set roots there. That's what they were doing 12 years, for 12 years in the northern part of Iraq under their so-called no-fly zone, which really there was no resolution to. They just made it up. There was no resolution to this no-fly zone. They made it up. But my whole point is that Rumsfeld and them were propagandizing that the masses of Iraqi people wanted to be liberated, that they were going to be welcoming them with opening arms. And what did they do once they got into the Baghdad? They concocted this little fake imagery, CNN-sponsored story of pulling down the statue of Saddam and made it look like this was like the end and fall of the regime and the resistance as we know it. It was all propaganda. Now they're in a real grind. Now they're in a real day-to-day, street-to-street, guerrilla warfare type of firefight. And he's still trying to spin it, saying that the overwhelming majority appreciate Sam being there. There's no facts to show this whatsoever. Every time you turn around, if people hear a Black Hawk helicopter crashing down, they all come out to cheer. The other day, a bunch of people came out when some Marines or soldiers got hit, and they were upset that they weren't killed, that they were only injured. Who's kidding who here? But they're so caught up in propaganda
and bullshit
and trying to deliberately manipulate. And see, generally, in this, as long as I got my cheese, I don't care who my government crushes to its knees, society, they've been able to roll over, you know, Panama, Grenada, Yugoslavia, you know, on and on and on. But now, since they're trying to set up camp there, and there's a growing resistance movement, and they're so raggedy and cheap that they're not even halfway even helping their soldiers. As Gerald mentioned, many of them don't even have chest protectors on. A whole another herd of them are getting sick. Dry pneumonia, right? You know, in other words, depleted uranium, and they're medically discharging them. They're trying to hide the soldiers, from the media to show who's getting injured and how they're getting injured, you know, legs blown off and all of this type of stuff. This is a sick government. So for Rumsfeld, so in essence what I'm saying is instead of doing all of this yapping like this first talker did about Rumsfeld's legacy and all of this type of, you know, symbolic stuff, just listen to what the fool says. Just listen to how he strategized things, and then it becomes clear that his legacy is this nothing more than an imperialist death meddler that's now in a, and now he's in a situation where some of the pigs are coming home to roost.
Look it. Let's just be logical. They got 156 soldiers killed, American soldiers killed in Iraq since May 1st, right? Now, what actually, that's more than died in Vietnam the first 3 years. Now, how is this possible? How did this develop? Just for the sake of argument, I am not agreeing with Mr. Rumsfeld or any of them. Let us just say, though, that there was a section of Iraqi population that, you know, that let's say that even the majority, whatever, said that, oh, we love Americans. Well, we love you. We love your bombs and your depleted uranium too, whatever, right? Well, obviously, even if that were true, is it true now? Right now, we have nobody going to help their ass. The Turks said, sorry, I got problems of my own. Japanese said, so sorry. No, they can't do it. The Koreans said, fuck you, mate. What kind of coalition they got? The Italians call themselves coming in. Yeah, we ready. With their fascist-like leader sending troops. Booyah! Soon as they got there, they got served. And I think it was like, what, 25, 26 of them died.
Yeah, I just saw them on TV blowing a bugle by a bunch of caskets.
So now, wait a minute. So what's really going on? Well, here's how it really looks. Let's say, if here I am, I'm in Iraq, and I don't have an opinion about imperialism. I don't believe that, to tell you the truth. But I said, but let's just say, what did the, so they have their little propaganda thing of Tracy talking about pulling down a statue. Then what did they do? Then they encouraged elements to rob all of the national treasures of the country. And they allowed people, basically opened the doors and allowed people to rob the beautiful museums and the archives and all the stuff that Iraq had. That alone is going to change people's attitude about Sam. But that's not all that happened. Remember, they brought the old Uncle Tom Iraqi leaders out there in front of a crowd of people talking about, here's your new leaders. People start throwing bottles and shit at them. Then what happened? They shot into the crowd, killing 17, wounding over 80. And this goes on. And now, all of a sudden, we got... Here's Iraq's guerrilla groups. U.S. intelligence agencies have identified several guerrilla groups in Iraq that officials believe are behind much of the anti-U.S. violence. I do not vouch for this, but this is once again from their media. The Return Party, the largest insurgent group, according to U.S. intelligence, consisting primarily of members of Saddam's Ba'ath Party. Muhammad's army consists of at least several hundred former members of Iraq's intelligence and security services. Saddam's Fedayeen, one of Saddam's pre-war irregular militias. Mundata al-Wilaya, a Shiite extremist group operating in Baghdad and southern Iraq. Ansar al-Alam, a Sunni group composed primarily of ethnic Kurds from Iraq's north that U.S. officials say have ties to Al-Qaeda. Abu Mazhab Zawi, a Jordanian man with Al-Qaeda ties thought to be working with Ansar al-Alam. They don't even know. Listen, today's Oakland Tribune had that picture of the general, the one Arab general they got. You know, they're putting him forward now, so everybody thinks, see, it's not anti-Arab. We're showing him with another Arab. And you know what? Homeboy's in Florida. You understand what I'm saying? Talking stuff about thugs and balling his fists at the air. What's up with this foolishness? They moved their leadership out of the country, y'all. Now, come on. Come on. Let's just be logical and dispassionate. I know I got a lot of passion for this, but I'm going to cool it down. I want you just to look at the facts. They moved their leadership out of the country. They lie and say 5,000 people is fighting them. The CIA done already told them it's 50,000. Who's winning this war? I don't know.
Well, first of all, you don't really need a majority. So when Rumsfeld talks about the majority of the people support us, first of all, like I said, there's no real facts on that. But it's rare, if hardly ever, that the majority in any on opposing or pro side actually engage in the situation.
That's what matters.
So it's those who are willing to act that is often the deciding aspect of how these things turn out, along with how well they're organized, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the U.S. contempt has, for those who had illusion on the U.S. military side, they've jaded them. And for those Iraqis who had illusion, they've, of course, wakened them up. So the U.S. has played a role in making people angry as they sat for months waiting for electricity to be turned on while the U.S. is over there getting his oil. I mean, that tells people concretely something that, wait a minute, this is a sham. You know, for those who didn't catch on in the beginning, when they let these buildings be looted, but they see that they got all the guards around, you know, the oil ministry building, the banks, you know, all that type of stuff. In other words, everywhere that Sam plans on getting his grips in, they're going to protect that. But other human resource and treasures are irrelevant. And then, of course, just on a very basic level, when you start to disrupt just the basic lives and habits of common working people, this is when you really start to offset things. For all of the talk about Saddam, you know, and how much of a ruthless brute he was, and he was, the women in general did not have to duck and dodge in the way they have to now, to the point where they can't even go out at night. Many fathers are scared to let their daughters go to school, and they didn't have to go through that type of nonsense under Saddam. But now, under Sam, they do. So this turns people's stomach, and it crystallizes the hypocrisy that Sam really stands for. But once again, here's what a recent author on Talk of the Nation has to say about Rumsfeld as she describes the real Rumsfeld as she knows. So let's see how they try to put Rumsfeld back within the shadow. Check this out.
She's just published a book titled Rumsfeld, The Personal Portrait. She joins us from our bureau in New York, and thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
You've been listening to the program from the top of the hour. Have we been discussing the Donald Rumsfeld that you know?
Well, only to some extent. You've been discussing the Donald Rumsfeld, except for the gentleman from the Lexington Institute. You've been discussing the Donald Rumsfeld that one reads about every morning in the newspapers. But that is not the Donald Rumsfeld I have known for 20 years.
Now you got,
not at all.
You got extraordinary access to him in
yes.
order to write this book.
Yes, I did.
Tell us something.
But, of course, he was conducting a war at the time, which was a slight interruption.
I bet. But it made the time awfully interesting that you did have.
Yes.
Tell us something you know that many of us might find surprising.
What you might find surprising is that he is probably the only figure in Washington, in the government, who never manipulates.
Never manipulates?
No, he does not. And that's one of the reasons that people get very angry with him. And they describe this as being disrespectful to them, whereas, of course, it's actually being very respectful toward them, because he does not manipulate anybody. He doesn't fool around. He doesn't give backward answers to questions. And the great fuss, by the way, over this memo about the war on terror being a long slog is a complete mystery to me. I'll bet you there are 25 such memos somewhere in the files of the Pentagon. Because what he was saying is, this is a long slog, and that's true. We had a brilliant victory in Iraq. That was a military war. But a war on terror is something else, and it's something that I should say that democratic people are not that brilliant at fighting. We'd do a lot better at it if we had a more beastly government, because they, if you notice, if you look around, most of the beastlier governments in this world are not as troubled by terror as we are.
And Democrat, you were speaking of small D.
Small D. Yes.
Now, what's fascinating about this spin master is that she has the nerve to say that Rumsfeld is probably the only person in government that never manipulates. Mm. Here's a person who intentionally set up the Office of Strategic Influence,
right,
and the department said that they needed to do this, and they were going to actually plant stories that were false in foreign countries as an effort to influence public opinion across the world. Now, you can't get more manipulative than that.
That's right.
So for her to get up here and say this about a person who was in the forefront of creating this little agency, is this the height of hypocrisy? It also exposes KQED's NPR show for the role that it truly plays in letting this buffoon get up here and say something like this. Now, in the midst of controversy, of course, it was quote-unquote formally disbanded. But that's like formally disbanded in a way they formally disbanded, quote-unquote, the School of the Americas. And just called it another name and went about the same type of terrorism killings and, you know, et cetera, things that they do. Now, she goes on to say he gives no backward answers to questions and all of this propaganda. But it's interesting that even the New York Times had to admit that after Rumsfeld's little OSI was supposed to have been disbanded, the disinformation aspect was still going on. When they said themselves that, quote, the Pentagon was considering issuing a secretive directive to American military to conduct covert operations aimed at influencing public opinion and policy making in friendly and neutral nations. The proposal has ignited a fierce battle throughout the Bush administration over whether the military should carry out secret propaganda missions in friendly nations like Germany. The fight, one Pentagon official said, is over, quote, the strategic communications for our nation, the message we want to send for long-term influence and how we do it. We have the assets and capabilities and the training to go into friendly and neutral nations to influence public opinion. We could do it and get away with it. That doesn't mean we should, unquote. In other words, Rumsfeld was in the forefront of creating false propaganda and psychops. This is what he's all about. He's about spinning. He's about manipulation. Now, all of this type of stuff about they won the war, but now they're in a fight against the terrorists, and this is a fight that's going to be a long slog. Rumsfeld and all of these thugs were claiming that there was just going to be a bunch of flag waving coming in, you know, like when forces came and quote unquote liberated France. And stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on, the height of hypocrisy and the veil of deceit within the shadow knows no bounds.
You know what, brothers and sisters? You notice we here at Slavery Folk, we don't be calling this stuff no fight against terrorism because we don't believe that it's true. Now, that doesn't mean that there's no terrorism in the world. But understand this. When a man shoulders that rocket launcher and takes out a Black Hawk or kills up some soldiers on a Humvee, in our opinion, that is not terrorism. And you know what? In the opinion of the people that think, in the majority of this earth, anybody will tell you, that's not terrorism. That's killing the invader. That's taking your country back. It's absolutely, I mean, look, it's so bad now that it's not even working. Nobody thinks that the American press is on the side of the Iraqis. Right? Now, come on, let's be real. But I'm just randomly looking through the press. According to San Jose Mercury today. The United States is losing the fight. U.S. civilian and military officials have tried to blame the recent increase in anti-American attacks on foreign fighters and diehard loyalists of Saddam Hussein's former government. Hogwash. Lousy excuse. People are fighting against being occupied. That's what they're fighting against. They know what the hell they're fighting against. Ain't nobody running around here, Saddam, Saddam. Hell no. They saying U.S. out, U.S. out. That's what the hell they saying. And it's, Tracy's absolutely right. The person that, this person is either so cynical or too stupid to see manipulation when it occurs. This press agent basically for Rumsfeld that just spoke, this woman. On and on. It's so obvious to everybody in the world, by the way. You got to read the press outside of this country. British press is in English. Check it. Don't take our word. Check it yourself. Read The Guardian. Read The Independent. And you will see. Everybody else is calling it what it is. It's an occupation and the people fighting them, they ain't no damn terrorists. They're resistors. They are resisting U.S. imperialism.
Now let's go back to Rumsfeld, who's asked on Meet the Press show with Tim Russell where they plan to take the fight to the quote-unquote terrorists. So let's see what this dude has to say, and we'll check him from there. Dig this.
And that's what we're doing. We can win this war. We will win this war. And the president has every intention of staying after the terrorists and the countries that harbor terrorists until we have won this war.
How do you respond to those who suggest that the war on terror should have been focused on Al-Qaeda and that the resources that are now applied to Iraq are misapplied, that Saddam was not the threat that he was presented by the administration, and the war should have focused on Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda?
Tim, we said from the outset that there are several terrorist networks that have global reach, and that there were several countries that were harboring terrorists that have global reach. We weren't going into Iraq when we were hit on September 11th. And the question is, well, what do you do about that? If you know there are terrorists, and you know there's terrorist states, Iraq's been a terrorist state for decades, and you know there are countries harboring terrorists, we believe, correctly, I think, that the only way to deal with it is you can't just hunker down and hope they won't hit you again. You simply have to take the battle to them. And we have been consistently working on the Al-Qaeda network. We've captured a large number of those folks, captured or killed, just as we've now captured or killed a large number of the top 55 Saddam Hussein loyalists.
Now, once again, see, this guy's practicing the art of deception. He's mixing Al-Qaeda with Saddam and throwing in this terrorist state stuff. That's, you know, Saddam has been a terrorist state for decades and all of that. Of course, this is, you know, obviously when Sam was great friends with him and shaking hands with him, various representatives, Cheney, whoever, you know. I mean, but my whole point is that here he's saying this stuff about we have to go after countries that harbor terrorists. Now, if you look at the recent Newsweek magazine, what's basically going on is they're trying to protect Boy George. Rumsfeld has gone through his little heat because they all are full of crud. Rumsfeld goes through his little heat for a time being. Is he going to lose his position? Powell went through his heat for a little while. Condoleezza Rice went through hers, and Boy George was supposed to be mad at her. Now Cheney is going through his stuff. Now, if you look, this recent November 17th, 2003 Newsweek article, How Dick Cheney Sold the War, the inside story, why he fell for bad intelligence and pitched it to the president. So now it's Cheney. This is some sick stuff. All of these guys were in cahoots, but this is what some of the stuff they say. Of all the president's advisors, Cheney has consistently taken the most dire view of the terrorist threat on Iraq. Bush, was the decision maker, but more than any advisor, Cheney was the one to make the case to the president that war against Iraq was an urgent necessity. Beginning in the late summer of 2002, he persistently warned that Saddam was stocking up chemicals and biological weapons. And last March, on the eve of the invasion, he declared that, quote, "We believe that he, Saddam Hussein, has in fact reconstituted nuclear weapons," unquote. It goes on to say that he also said a bit optimistically that, quote, "I really do believe that we will be greeted as liberators," unquote. After 7 months, investigators are still looking for the arsenal of weapons of mass destruction. Cheney has repeatedly suggested that Baghdad has ties to Al-Qaeda. Now, who did you just hear saying these ties to Al-Qaeda?
Rumsfeld.
Yeah. They're all saying this
same
stuff.
Same thing.
It's all, you know, but they're just playing games. This is the art of diversion.
Right.
1 week is Rumsfeld on the hot seat. The next week is the director of the CIA. Then Condoleezza Rice. Then Colin Powell. Rumsfeld again. Cheney this week. And this is some sick stuff. But at the same time, they try to maintain that these dogs have some kind of integrity when they've intentionally manipulated this process and lied their way into this situation every step of the way.
Now, you know, it's hard to follow that because it's so obviously true, you know? This is to give people a sense that somebody, you know, that they doing something about it, that they trying to clean something up. And it's really, it's just hogwash. They, regardless, you know, the point is, Malcolm X once made a statement. Malcolm X said, you know what? You can't make a chicken lay a duck egg. Well, let's take that and work with it. You cannot take imperialism and expect it dripping with blood, victims all over the earth of all ages, colors, sexes. You can't expect such a murderous system to be anything but itself, to be humane. They tried to sell this phony idea about this humane imperialism, this new imperialism. We're going to help you. We're going to help you in Somalia. Somalians ran their ass out of there. But why were they interested at all? Well, it winds up that where Somalia is, there are geopolitical reasons that they would like to set up a base in Somalia. Also, they done found some oil around there. That's why they were interested in Somalia. Because Clinton hurry up and told them when people started yelling for help in Rwanda, before the genocide took place, we have no strategic interest in Rwanda. That is, they don't have any natural resources that the United States needs. Period. You understand what's happening here? No, this is a silly game of musical chairs, except that nobody really loses on their side. We're the only ones that lose if we get sucked into this kind of bull.
Now last, Rumsfeld is asked about the so-called uniqueness of the Iraqi threat. So let's see what this dude has to say. Check this out.
But Syria, Iran, North Korea are all harbor terrorists. We were told Iraq was unique because they possessed weapons of mass destruction. What if that has proven not to be true?
It hasn't proven not to be true. We've seen an interim report by David Kay. And it was a thoughtful report. There's some 1,200 or 1,300 Americans there working on the weapons of mass destruction effort. He came back with an interim report that reported on the things he'd found thus far. It did not prove that there were, he did not come in and say, here are weapons of mass destruction, nor did he come in and disprove the intelligence that we had and other countries had had before the war. Seems to me that the sensible thing to do is to let them continue their work and produce their final report. When they do, we'll know.
He's not manipulative.
I mean, what more do you need to hear? He's going to try to play word games. Of course this guy, if he had proof, he would have came back. They would have had it all over.
That's
O'Reilly
right.
and them would have been cheering up and down. They would have been running up and down the stations with this type of junk about weapons of mass destruction found. The fact that he came back with a report at this point showing no finding of weapons of mass destruction, of course, shows that they don't have any weapons of mass destruction and have not found any at this point. So him just flip-flopping and stuff. I mean, these guys are just some sick little puppies. But how did they help get into this whole type of stuff? Remember, quote, Boy George, not Cheney, not Rumsfeld, not Condoleezza Rice, even though they all said similar things. But Boy George, quote, the evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Iraq has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes and other equipment for gas centrifugals used to enrich uranium for nuclear weapons. Unquote. October 7, 2002. Quote, the CIA possesses solid reporting of senior-level contacts between Iraq and Al-Qaeda going back a decade. Unquote. CIA Director George Tenet. October 7, 2002. Quote, we have discovered Iraq has a growing fleet of unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, that could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas. We are concerned Iraq is exploring ways of using UAVs for missions targeting the U.S. Unquote. Boy George, September 7th, 2002. Mm. Look, UAV drones can't fly more than 300 miles. Iraq is 6,000 miles away from the goddamn U.S. Enough! Enough! Lord. This is some sick. These fools got to go.
That's what I'm talking
to go. And I'm not talking voting some other fool in.
Yeah.
I'm talking
like
about
Dean.
They got to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you ain't coming back no more. They got to go.
I didn't know you was a poet, Tracy.
Hold on one sec.
So Roger Ailes, Fox, sued me. Well, actually, first what happened was we got a letter from them threatening to sue us. And my publisher was a little upset and nervous about it, she told me. And I said, look, I've been doing this for 30 years. Don't worry. Satire is protected speech. Even if the object of the satire doesn't get it. I said, our letter back to Fox should be, dear Fox, please, please, please sue us. So, this made her feel better, and she got Floyd Abrams, one of the preeminent First Amendment lawyers in the country, who wrote them a letter. It wasn't the please, please, please letter. It was, dear Fox, this is the United States of America letter. So I thought it was all over. And a couple months went by, and I finished the book, and then went on vacation, and I was on vacation happily. And they sued me. They sued us. You know, and it was great. It was just great. They They're printing the books just as they were suing us. And so we went to court, and Fox was literally laughed out of court. Now, normally when you say literally laughed out of court, you mean figuratively. Not here, not here. The Fox attorney opened the hearing this way. She said, "Your Honor, the Fox News Channel has over 85 million subscribers." When the judge said, "I don't know what that means. I get cable. Does that mean I'm a subscriber?" And she said, "Yes." And the courtroom burst into laughter, and they were laughing. They were laughing for the next 20 minutes. 20 minutes of just laughing at the Fox lawyer. And they looked at the Fox attorney, and he said, "There are hard cases, and there are easy cases. This is an easy case. Your case is wholly without merit, both factually and legally, and it's highly unlikely that your trademark, Fair and Balanced, is actually a valid trademark." But the, actually, the University of Maryland did a study, and they may have given them this wholly without merit slogan too. This is by the Program on International Policy at the University of Maryland, funded by the Ford Foundation. And they did a study on Americans' misperceptions and how they correlated with where they got their information on the war in Iraq. And they tracked three misperceptions. First one was that there was proof of a connection between Saddam and Al-Qaeda. The second was that we have found weapons of mass destruction. And the third was that world opinion was in favor of our invasion of Iraq. Now, they found that 80% of the viewers, and they found that people who listened to or got most of their news from or and watched PBS, Bill Moyers, and NPR, people got their news primarily from them. 23% held one of these three misperceptions. But the best part of the statistic, best finding was that the more you watched Fox, the more likely you were to have one of the misperceptions. In other words, the more you watch Fox, the stupider you got. Part of my book is, basis of my book, there's a right-wing media and they shill for this administration. And Fox is part of that, Rush is part of that. Here's an example. This is from August 26th, from Britt Hume, also on Fox News Channel, from his Grapevine segment of the show. It's a quote. It said, 277 U.S. soldiers have now died in Iraq, which means that statistically speaking, U.S. soldiers have less of a chance of dying from all causes in Iraq and citizens have of being murdered in California, which is roughly the same geographical size. The most recent statistics indicate that California has more than 2,300 homicides each year, which means about 6.6 murders each day. Meanwhile, our U.S. troops have been in Iraq for 160 days, which means they are incurring about 1.7 deaths, including illness and accidents each day. Well, yeah, but also the most recent statistics show that there are 34 million people living in California, and there are 133,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, which actually means that our troops in Iraq are about 65 times more likely to be killed than citizens in California. And for each one of our soldiers who's killed, 5 or 6 are wounded in Maine. Now, when this was pointed out to Britt, his response was, this was in the Washington Post, he said, admittedly, it was a crude comparison. But it was illustrative of something. And I agree. It's illustrative of how shameless these guys are. Bill O'Reilly was on Terry Gross's show, Fresh Air, and he walked off, and he said he was treated unfairly, and
he was asked tough questions. Teacher, defund them.
He went on the air the next day and said that PBS and NPR get $1 billion from Congress. Makes stuff up, okay? Pulls it directly from his bum. Now, the NPR ombudsman was so scared that he criticized Terry Gross for asking tough questions. And I don't know if he listened to the same interview I did, or maybe he doesn't know Bill O'Reilly, because O'Reilly lied throughout the interview. And I'll give you one that made me kind of angry. She asked him about this Harper's article where he had interviewed Jeremy Glick. Amy Goodman talked about people in the World Trade Center, and Jeremy Glick had lost his father in the World Trade Center and had signed a petition against the war in Iraq. And that really made O'Reilly mad. He said, I want this kid in here. I want to talk to him. So he had Jeremy Glick on, who's a PhD student, a candidate at Rutgers, and Jeremy was against the war and said that Bush had pointed out that he had funded the Mujahideen and those kind of things. And O'Reilly got very angry and told him to shut up! Shut up! Sound familiar? And he turned off his mic. And that was the end of the interview. And then, it's on radio, right? He said, according to Glick, who told Harper's, and Harper's, and O'Reilly hasn't denied this, he told Jeremy, he said, get the F out of here, or I'll effing tear you apart. Now, Terry Gross asked him about this, and he said, O'Reilly said, did you read the transcript of the interview? He said, well, I read the Harper's thing. Yeah. Well, that's what the elite media does. They didn't have the whole transcript. They took it out of context. That's what they did. You see, this kid said some outrageous things. He said Bush 1 and Bush 2 had orchestrated. Bush the Elder and this president had orchestrated 9/11. Well, as a journalist, it was my duty to ask if he had any proof.
and he didn't. That's defamation. Well, I had written about this in my book, and I read the transcript of that, and Jeremy Glick never said anything of the sort. We have to take what they say and expose it, use it against them. My job is to sort of do jujitsu. When they lie, use it against them. Hold them up to scorn and ridicule. Because what they want us to do is to shut up. They want you to shut up. But don't shut up. Don't shut up. Stand up. Stand up and fight. Stand up and fight. Everyone here, stand up and fight.
If we had an audience this large and didn't realize that there were some enemies present.
Good evening. I'm Gerald Smith, and this is your Making It Plain news service. The most important matter must come first. Got health care? Not as Safeway gets its way. Should you have to wait 37 months to qualify for health insurance at your job? That's what Safeway wants supermarket workers to do, among other things. Two-tier pay levels, capping off your raises at $14.50 an hour. More than 70,000 workers went on strike or were locked out because they believe workers shouldn't have to go through these changes. Meanwhile, corporate CEO Steve Bird dumped more than $24 million in company stock right before he forced the workers out. He's profiteering while others lose benefits. So let's show Safeway the Bay Area's got solidarity. The march to support the grocery workers will be next Saturday, November 22nd at 1 p.m. Please gather at Rockridge Barn, 5660 College Avenue. We're then going to march on Safeway and Albertsons. Very important. Please be there. We are in the midst of the largest labor struggle since the UPS workers, that is the United Parcel Service workers, went out on strike in 1997. In the late evening of October 11th, the strike was called by the United Food and Commercial Workers, the UFCW, against Bonds and Pavilions, which is Safeway's. Their so-called competitors, Ralph's and Albertsons, immediately responded by locking out all of their unionized workers. By the early morning of October the 12th, 70,000 grocery workers in Southern California were walking the picket lines. These workers are fighting for their livelihood and their need, and they need our support. And they're really, in effect, fighting for health care for all of us. What we need to think about right now is universal health care, so this wouldn't have to be an issue. But right now it is, and we've got a side to take with the workers against the bosses. These 3 million multi-billion dollar supermarket chains who are currently crying poverty earn over $8 billion in net profit in the last 5 years alone. That would have been impossible without the hundreds of thousands of workers who make their stores run. The companies claim that since Walmart is moving in to the supermarket business, they have to cut their costs in order to compete. They are trying to divide the working class by claiming that the grocery workers are overpaid. If we are to believe the companies, it seems every grocery worker is making about $17 an hour. But the vast majority of grocery workers are part-time.
and the average worker is taking home about $1,300 a month. One of the main victories these workers have won over decades of struggle is a decent health care package. However, the contract that has been offered by these multi-billion dollar chains is an insult at best. The proposed contract could cut health benefits by 50%, cap wages at $14.90 an hour for new employees after 6 years of service, and even attacks the health care benefits of those who are already retired. One of the main goals of this contract is to institute a two-tier wage system. This would mean everyone hired under the proposed contract would be on a different wage and benefit scale than those already working there. Obviously, the company would like to try to find any pretense needed to fire the older workers in order to reap hundreds of millions of dollars in added benefits with their new low-wage workforce. The goal of these companies to institute a low-wage and benefits workforce similar to the ones that exist at Walmart. This is what we're talking about, folks. This is serious. So please, march to support the Grocery Workers Saturday, November 22nd, next Saturday. Not this Saturday. At 1 p.m., gather at Rockridge BART, located 5660 College Avenue. March on Safeway and Albertsons. All right, now, apparently, constitutionally protected activity means nothing to the likes of Rumsfeld, Bush, the Homeland Security, or even the local pig departments here in California. It looks like they have been infiltrating peace organizations. I tell you, it's a mess. Okay. Liberty in the balance, more scrutiny of peace groups. Public safety justifies surveillance since 9/11, authorities say. The first hint that their group had been infiltrated came when they saw the dead man's picture in the newspaper. The story about his demise in a motorcycle accident said his name was Aaron Kilner and that he had been a detective with the Fresno County Sheriff's Department. But members of Peace Fresno, an anti-war group, formed soon after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks had known the nice young man as Aaron Stokes. Quote, the guy with the short hair and the goatee who sat in the corner, unquote, as one member described him. He participated in demonstrations. He took flyers with him that he said he was going to distribute. And when he was asked about his occupation, he said he had some kind of a trust fund or inheritance that made it possible for him not to work, said Kathleen Campbell, an attorney for the peace group that now is debating whether to sue the sheriff's department for invasion of privacy. Fresno County Sheriff Richard Pierce has little to say about the incident, other than declaring that Peace Fresno is not under surveillance by his department and that his detectives operate within the law. But peace activists and law enforcement officials agree that the monitoring of anti-war groups and other activists has stepped up since the terrorist attacks 2 years ago. And Attorney General John Ashcroft last week issued new guidelines on anti-terrorism investigations that critics contend will give the FBI more leeway in spying on anti-war groups and others. Justice Department officials say the guidelines, by strengthening the FBI's ability to look for evidence of possible terrorist planning, help law enforcement protect Americans. But the move comes on the heels of several incidents in the past year that have made civil libertarians wary of renewed government spying. Earlier this year, Kilner was gaining the trust of Peace Fresno members. Undercover agents from the California Highway Patrol were attending training sessions by a protest group planning demonstrations at the Ministerial Conference and Expo on Agricultural Science and Technology in Sacramento. Even after two of them were discovered by activists and asked to leave, others remained, keeping tabs secretly and legally on what was going on. Last spring, anti-war protesters planning a demonstration in Oakland saw their rally broken up with rubber bullets after a state counterterrorism unit issued a secret bulletin to law enforcement warning of the potential for violence. And a prosecutor in Albuquerque, New Mexico, was fired after she attended an anti-war rally there and was accused of pointing out a number of undercover police monitoring the event. "I did no such thing," said Jennifer Albright, who was pursuing legal action over her firing and who said police infiltration of peace groups is common practice in Albuquerque. Law enforcement spying on such groups once was commonplace, especially during the Vietnam War. But legal experts say the practice slowed amid concerns that law enforcement was violating the free speech rights of activists. Since September 11, 2001, however, police agencies have made it clear that they have no qualms about conducting investigations using cameras, plainclothes detectives, and other methods. They emphasize that such probes are conducted within the constraints of the law, which allows them to covertly observe an array of public meetings and activities, but allows formal investigations to be open only when there is suspicion of criminal activity. Yes, they're spying on you. You better know that. Well, wonder why things are going so badly in Iraq, or why President Bush's policies there still remain a relatively high approval rating back home? A small paragraph buried in a recent New York Times news analysis can give some insight into both questions. Discussing the worries of civilians in Baghdad, where missiles are destroying hotels and suicide bombers are killing or wounding hundreds, the Times assured its readers that, and I quote, "The United States is doing everything it can do to fight their fears. All over the country, the occupying authorities have put up large billboards featuring bucolic signs of date palms arched over a riverbank." I guess they didn't have time to tear those out yet. "Inspirational messages are splashed over the pretty pictures. Baghdad is getting better," says one. They got to be kidding, y'all, but this is the truth. They spent our tax money, and who the hell they think they fooling? Well, as I mentioned before, the CIA says that insurgents are now 50,000 strong in Iraq. The Bush administration has cut veterans' benefits and forced wounded American soldiers to pay for hospital meals. They have kept returning sick and wounded American soldiers in miserable conditions in U.S. military bases and made them wait months for doctor's appointments. Now they want to close schools and commissaries on military bases and privatize the remaining commissaries. Oh, well, that means more taxpayer money for Halliburton, Bechtel, and all other American corporations profiting immensely from the Iraq War. Well, here are some of the words from the front lines. Soldiers slam the occupation. And here we go. Quote, "In the beginning, I was into this. We all were. But we haven't found anything. No weapons of mass destruction. No Saddam. No nothing. And the people here, they hate us. If we were rolling through a town and they were cheering, hell yeah, it would make us feel better. But when they're not cooperating and throwing rocks and giving us evil looks, we don't want to be there. We're conquerors to them. It wasn't supposed to be like that. I hate it over there. I hate it. Specialist Costello, while on leave from Iraq." Here's another. Quote, "I don't give a damn about Rumsfeld. All I give a damn about is going home. The only thing his visit meant for us was that we had to clean up a lot of mess to make the place look pretty. And he didn't even look at it anyway." Unquote. Specialist Rue Gritton on Rumsfeld's visit to Turk Rit. Here's another. Quote, "If I got to talk to Rumsfeld, I'd tell him to give us a return date. We've been here 6 months and the rumor is we'll be here until next March. This is totally, totally uncalled for." Unquote. Sergeant Green in Tikrit, Iraq. Yes, sir. If you want to hear more words of wisdom from the front lines, check out Traveling Soldier, an anti-war newsletter for people on active duty. You can find it on the web at www.traveling/soldier.org. Well, you know what? This Bush character, he wants to ban protests during his UK visit. Let me smack myself. Did you just hear me, y'all? He wants England to ban demonstrations while he's in Britain. Anti-war protesters claim that U.S. authorities have demanded a, quote, a rolling exclusion zone, unquote, around President George Bush during his visit, as well as a ban on marches in parts of central London. This fool done lost his damn mind. London, England, is not Baghdad, Iraq. And he can't even stop it in Iraq, you sorry fool. Oh, this is crazy. Well, more crazy on the way. And I quote, the Secret Service did a bad service to the government. So committee chairperson Pat Roberts summarized in the report that took President George W. Bush out of the line of fire. CIA Director George Tenet is the scapegoat for Bush and his defenders, so they say. Boy. Now, get this. Homeland Security done went prime time. I don't know if y'all paying attention, but for those who missed it, this season, ABC is running a new primetime drama on Thursday about the Homeland Security Department. The show is based on the concept of a special operations team contained within DHS, whose purpose is to respond to and preempt potential attacks indicated in the president's daily threat matrix briefing. Coincidentally, the show is called Threat Matrix. Isn't that some sick shit? Now, wait a minute, I ain't through. Dig this. Prison guards have recently flew legislators to Hawaii. Despite the crippling state budget situation, which will involve lots of painful cuts for education, transportation, range management, health, the powerful prison guards union is buying off legislators like always. Prisons are the one area of the budget that actually had an increase in their funding, despite the cuts handed down in all other areas. The guards union is the group that really runs Sacramento, some say. What Schwarzenegger was saying about casinos run by Indian tribes was completely wrong, because Indians are still the most low-income group in the state. Dozens of legislators attend prison guards Maui meeting event. I tell you, what can I tell you on that? Just put two and two together, folks. That's going to be all for the Making It Plain news service, and we hope you've enjoyed our program. Tracy.
Crazy world with a crazy market system that allows thugs and crazy human beings like Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Bush to run roughshod over our daily lives throughout the world. But in order to deal with this madness, we ourselves are going to have to take it to the extreme. And for some, many are going to perceive that as us being a little bit crazy. Until the next time, slave revolt. Out.
Crazy.